Morning, everybody. I am Judy, which most of you know already, and I'm here with Misty this, well, for us, it's this evening. We are pre-recording this because it's pretty hard to figure out how to do this kind of interview without being in the same room and doing it live. So we are going to a recording to be able to do this for you today. We have a talk schedule planned out. Nah, that's not the right word. We have a talk. We know what we're going to talk about. We actually don't know what the content will be. We very deliberately decided we're just going to have a usual Misty Judy conversation, but you get to listen in. But it is about the concept of deconstruction. I hope that you got a chance to hear read the story that is going out in the blurb, which came from an article on a Native cultural matter. And I love the story. It's about a grandfather taking his grandson up on a mountain to gather sacred objects. And at one point, as he's gathering them and giving him, this is important, you should take this along too. Then he turns and says, this big rock, this is important. And the grandson says, grandfather, I can't possibly take this. Like, my hands are completely full. And he said, I guess you're going to have to let something go. And so that's kind of where we're heading today, is that that story really spoke to both of us about where we have feel like we've come in through in our spiritual process. The idea that we at some point decided to carry some things, and then at some point we couldn't carry all the things we were carrying for a number of reasons. We dropped some, and the process of figuring out what to carry going forward is pretty ongoing. Before I go much farther into that, though, we do have a part of our practice as a body, which is to take a moment to breathe. To breathe deeply, to really be in the moment and let ourselves settle here. And so I'm going with the usual four square breathing, which is to take a big breath in, hold it at the top just for a bit, and then let it out slowly. And so some people say let it out like for about twice as long, and other people say let it out and then hold at the bottom. I don't know, either way. Let's breathe together. So Misty, thanks for doing this with me.
Yeah, well, that breath was helpful. I'm glad we did that.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit more relaxed now too. Being as we don't really have a structure for this, I think we did think of things that we would like to know from each other.
Yeah.
Can I start?
Sure.
Okay. So you and I have thought about the fact that we came into faith from very different places, even though we landed in a similar place, at least for a while. Like my background being birthed into evangelical Mennonite country and considering myself in that sphere for a long, 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 long time before I start to question and maybe not feel like the labels fit quite as well anymore. You weren't birthed into evangelical Mennonitism. And that makes me question. I'm just going to even read kind of what I wrote down. Because I think of cognitive dissonance as being a part of things. The idea of sometimes we come to a place where we either are holding two beliefs that don't fit together right, or we hold a belief that actually isn't fitting for something in the evidence. And I think that's easy to ignore if you're from my background, but I wonder what that is like for somebody who doesn't grow up in that. Like, is there kind of cognitive dissonance right from the start? Because you kind of had a more of a sense of choice than I did. So does the question make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I converted back in 2020. Boy, that was fast. 1,000.
You went to deconstruction really fast then.
Yeah. Back in 2000, I started going to, actually, Tim and Corrine were there. And my brother had just died. I was quite depressed, and that I'd been through a lot of loss already. And I was really looking for a community. And I remember literally thinking, I don't care if I have to be judged. I just need people.
Yeah.
And there was this conscious choice to kind of just go with it. And, okay. And then I left that church like 4 years later and went to a much even more evangelical charismatic church with a whole lot of patriarchy, and feeling like I was like, I never felt like I was a good enough Christian. Like, I'm like, I'm not good at this. I think that was the cognitive dissonance, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other cognitive dissonance was why I always felt like so incapable and childlike, not in a good way, like an innocent way, but like I didn't know what was going on and I didn't know how things should work.
Yeah.
When I was successful and smart, like in my career, right? And yeah. I'm like, you know, I'm like, well, I'm really good at, you know, my work outside of church. Like, why isn't this working? And so there was just this long series of me ignoring things that bothered me. Also, when you become a Christian as an adult and you don't have that legacy, there's things you don't get, right? Where people are like, as a child, I learned this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
On the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. People who are like, oh, I don't know how you could deal with someone like this. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you know, I remember taking a counseling course and it's like, would you counsel someone who was gay? I'm like, yeah. Like, yeah. So I found myself disregarding my own judgment for a very long time in the effort to feel better.
Yeah. Would you feel free to talk some more about what was it that would have made a good Christian that you didn't feel like you could be?
Oh, like I didn't know the Bible. I couldn't state, like I couldn't, you know, I couldn't pull out a verse like that every situation. I was never, it was funny, I read a book called The Very Worst Missionary a while ago.
Oh, by Jamie Wright.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. She writes, capital Q, quiet time, about how, you know, getting that time in the morning or whenever it was, but the quiet time, bad and blah, blah. It never worked for me. Like I could never stick to that. And it just didn't make sense. And I never really felt that same confidence that a lot of people said they had, that God was beside them and with them. It was always this, this series of up. Okay. I feel like I'm doing well. Oh, I'm depressed. Not doing well. Oh, well, I'm going to be by myself because not doing well isn't really okay in the church, you know? And there was also this, I noticed, in hindsight, I realized, you know, I was new and shiny for a while as a new Christian.
Yeah.
And then that wore off for people, right? So they, sorry, dog. he just came laid right on the pillow I was using to hold up my thing. Yeah. You know, they just kind of, they wouldn't have as much patience. Like, okay, you're a new Christian, you're good. Oh, now you must serve and be useful. Right? You need to pay for your seat.
Yeah.
So just like, yeah, like just in hindsight, there was a whole lot of that not working very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we appreciate enough that there is a cultural element to Christianity. And I think, well, probably even different cultures within Christianity, because I've heard the same thing said of, like, Anglicanism seems to have its own culture, and certainly evangelicalism is, it's more than a faith. There is a cultural understanding to go with it, because it's got the values, it's got the language, it's got the understandings that aren't really talked about, but just implicit in there. And I kind of imagine it being a bit of a cross-cultural experience to come into that.
Oh, it's funny, like learning like church words.
Yeah.
I remember one of the first church services I went to, he talked about people being unchurched. And I remember feeling so dirty because I was the unchurched one. And I've always encouraged pastors not to say that anymore, because it's just like, would you want to be called unchurched? Actually, I'd love to be called unchurched right now, but like, I'm good with it now. You call me unchurched all you want. But yeah.
That's really interesting to me, because I would not have seen a value to that word the way you're saying it.
Yeah.
To me, it's more a description, like, of saying what I grew up when kind of churched me. But I appreciate that when you're the person whose life course has been different than the majority of people there, it could feel like a real othering word. Yeah. I also thought it really interesting, being as you had said, one of the main reasons you came to Christianity was that idea of community was really necessary in your life. And then in the end, you didn't feel like you could get that when you needed it the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, like, I had a pretty good community. You know, I worked with both Tim and Kareem there, and that was a really good community. And then when that ended, I was just never one of the cool kids in the other church. Gosh. So I kept trying to be cool, and you know, I would somewhat inappropriately, it's not the right word, I would say things that weren't safe in a large group that people didn't need to hear. So that wasn't, because it wasn't held right. So
it wasn't held
well. It was like they would get me to, like, I would speak in front of the whole church, and then, you know, that's like 600 people, And then, you know, nobody would ever follow up on stuff like that. Like, hey, how are you doing? Feeling after that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that was really terrible, this is just my complaining now, is being single in that, being single in that environment,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you have a pastor who won't meet you by yourself, even in public and that kind of stuff. So yeah. It was hard, right? So especially like as a 40 something year old woman, like, come on already. I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. I once got the Billy Graham ruled too. Not ever by a pastor, actually, but just an old friend. I had seen on Facebook that he was coming to Winnipeg. And I said, dude, like, we should get together for coffee. And he said back, well, maybe, you know, one time when my wife is with me. I didn't ask to meet you at a hotel. What do you think's
going to happen at Starbucks?
I'm not going to take you on the table at Starbucks. Okay.
So let's talk about you. So almost like when I think about me, like,
yeah,
like in terms of, you know, I have a before and after almost being a Christian, yeah. But for you, that was all, you know, always your frame of reference, right? So yeah. What made you start asking questions?
I think part of it is my personality within itself, because I have this deep sense of integrity within mm-hmm. myself that I was able to squelch for a certain amount of time, but mm-hmm. you can't squelch it forever. And I was also the person who was asking the awkward questions. Like, I remember being in Pioneer Girls and asking my Pioneer Girls leader, so why do women have to serve men because Eve ate the fruit first? Like, it didn't make sense to me. It was just this awkward silence that proceeded from there. But then within myself, I think there were a few things. One of the big ones actually was evolution. Always having to, because I grew up in a very anti-evolution church. I can tell you the song we sang about that and everything. Yeah, the chorus went, I'm no kin to the monkey's no kin to me. I don't know much about his ancestors, but mine didn't swing from a tree. So that was a Sunday school song. So the result is you know, having to like even go to say the Manitoba Museum and see these things and somehow always feel like I have to discount them in myself somehow. So
yeah.
It was the person who got me out of that was actually a Christian though. Francis Collins wrote a book called The Language of God. And he is a very well-known scientist who was in charge of the Human Genome Project in the National Institutes of Health in the US. And now I think he's the head of the entire National Institutes of Health. So he had a beautiful way of talking about faith and science and how they are not in conflict if we understand the purpose of each of them. So that got me thinking more about the Bible not needing to see the Bible as history. Another really helpful voice in that journey was the author Peter Enns. He is also Mennonite, and he's done a lot of this deconstruction work himself. In fact, I think he got kicked out of the seminary that he was teaching in because he had shifts. He had shifts, and he needed to, again, be honest with himself, have the integrity to go there. So and the last church I was in before this, again, the pastor I think there was really, really helpful because he had grown up as a missionary kid in the Congo and he had lived in none of it for a while as a social worker. And he had just life experiences of being in very, very different places that, you know, I haven't had that much. I went from small town Menoville to large city Menoville because of Winnipeg. There's no more Mennonites, I think, in the world than here. But he had that capacity to, because he had grown up and lived in different cultures, to see that there's more than one way of seeing the world. Mm-hmm. And while he could minister really well in a very Mennonite church, he also didn't seem to have a need to make other people think the way that he did. And I think that gave me the freedom to think differently. We had lots of coffees, actually. He never Billy Grahamed me. So, and then stuff within the Bible itself, like to have the relief of being able to see things as myth, but to me that word was devaluing. So until I started to find a way to value myth and understand it in a cultural context, myth doesn't mean lie. Myth means a way of expressing an important truth in story. And so those were some of the main features for me. Which, by the way, didn't necessarily make my transition to the table any easier. I once told Tim that sometimes, like, hearing him speak was like, okay, I have all these places, these rooms in my mind that, because of cognitive dissonance, you know, I kind of know they're there. So I might open the door and peek in and go, no, I don't want to go there yet. And then Tim will usually come up behind, swing the door right open and push me in and go, we're talking about this today. And I'm like, I didn't want to think about this yet. So the dissonance continues. Okay,
are you finding a little the dissonance a little bit more comfortable?
The idea of certainty had to die for me, mm-hmm. and once the death of needing certainty happened, there was a lot of relief in that. I miss it.
Me too. Especially right now.
Even if I don't feel like it was true, I miss it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I've often said I miss that.
But it was that it just feels better to be and have this integrity about my beliefs in being able to say, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever told you this. I think I've talked about this before, but that song, Only God Knows, that I do, that was incredibly important to me. It took me about 3 months to finish writing it.
Wow.
Because, like, there was these thoughts that I knew I wanted to say, I knew I wanted to get out, but I almost felt blasphemous for writing it as I was writing it. But yeah, it needed to come out. Kind of same question back. What drew you to deconstruction? What drew you to putting some things down?
Oh, I blame counseling. It's terrible. Mm. Yeah. I think all pastors should be afraid. Just kidding. Some should. So I don't even know how many years ago it is now, but I started engaging a counseling methodology called EMDR.
Yep.
You'll have to help me. Eye movement desensitization reprocessing. After going to talk therapy for a while, my therapist recommended this EMDR practitioner. And through that process, I realized I was dealing with a lot of trauma. And I also realized, I think EMDR is like the first thing that really started to connect me with my body. And I also realized I was making myself miserable trying not to sin. Like I was hyper-focused on sinning or not sinning or whatever. Well, okay. I was sinning, like in my view, right? Like
right,
I was eating, I was sinning. I was not reading my Bible enough. I was sinning. I was, you know, and I was kind of like, ugh, I don't know if I don't know what to do with this, but I put it aside while I was going to like through this heavy counseling. Cause that's not a good time to deconstruct. And so I consciously went, I'm going to put this aside for now. Oddly, I almost fully stopped going to church. I was having panic attacks quite often when I went there. It was the cognitive dissonance, right? So slowly I started. So once things got better that way, I started exploring and very quickly realized that I didn't believe the things that were being taught. And I couldn't, and to such a point that I couldn't be there anymore. It wasn't even just, oh, I disagree with this. It's like, oh, I disagree with this. And it's actually find it kind of offensive or painful for me to listen to. And plus you're not okay that I disagree with this. Like even without having that conversation, I knew that. And I sat and I watched, and I remember I watched, cause they were streaming. And there was, and I'm sure we've heard it from different people. They were like, okay, well, if you're not going to buy into our, because they did the summer, this is what we're doing this year thing. If you're not going to, you know, come and help us, then we need your seat. And that was the end. I was like, okay, you can have it. And I phoned the pastor and I just said, yeah, there's some huge disconnects for me. And he just said, okay, bye. And that was that. He unfriended me on Facebook. It was really, really painful at the time.
Yeah.
But I had a huge community. Hang on. So he's falling off the bed onto me. Duke, we're trying to record here.
Here's what's happening
to me, people.
Oh.
It's like
Oh, he just wants to be near you.
Yeah. Okay. So
a beautiful thing. Okay. I'm gonna be doing this by myself the rest of the
Okay, you might be. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, it was really painful, but that was when I had loosely started to engage the liturgist community, which is the podcast at the time with Mike McCarg and Michael Gunger.
Yeah.
And there's like quite a community around it. So, you know, there's the Facebook group, there's the Slack channel, and I started making friends there. And I even went to a liturgist gathering in Minneapolis that year. And I wasn't ready to go back. I realized after I went to that gathering, I wasn't ready to go back to a church yet. It was just too triggering. So I waited a very long time.
Yeah.
Did you go from church, like from the previous church to the table, or did you take some time off?
I had some time off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, I had a very similar experience to you, though, with one, like I've gone to a number of different churches in my life. And I had a very similar experience where I was going to a church basically more for my kids than for me. The only thing I liked about it was I could hide because it was big enough.
Yeah, that was helpful too.
I didn't have to get to know everybody. But then it started to not fit my kids so much either. And then they had a very similar thing said from the front, which was, you know, if you're not part of our ministries and not part of what we're doing here, other than, you know, Sunday mornings, then you're not really part of the church. So I said, okay, I guess I'm not really part of this church. See ya.
You ever wonder if they get these scripts? Like,
I don't know. But yeah, I told you about the pastor that I actually felt really that he was helping me a lot in my journey. He was actually one of the first people to suggest that maybe I should get divorced.
Oh wow.
And yeah.
Cool.
Because I told him enough about what was going on that he saw it as not necessarily being for staying in a marriage, not necessarily being for my best or the best of our family. So when he left, I really felt that sense of, I had felt more of a sense of connection with him than with the church as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I also ended up leaving and tried someplace else, this small church that was kind of just a loose gathering of people who just were trying to hang out and love each other. And then all of a sudden they decided to close. So I think I got 2 Sundays in with them before that was gone.
Oh.
And so yeah, there was quite a gap in there. And you know, I resonate with you in the fact that that's where you started to go at all was community. Because I think that's what I've always found with church is community. Even if I didn't necessarily agree with everything, even if I did, well, a lot of the time I did agree with things because I didn't learn to question until later. But there is, particular growing up Mennonite, there is this mm-hmm. strong sense of, well, culture within our faith. You know, I could see our church cemetery from my bedroom window kind of idea out in the country. Like it was just a sense of, it's just part of me in some way to be part of community. It feels right. It fits right. Because I know even to this day, especially because of a lot of my beliefs have changed, I'm sure a lot of my relatives think I'm absolutely gone bonkers with some of my things if they follow me on Facebook. But I know they will be there for me if I need them, you know? So I think I have found a sense of, there is community even with disagreement. I think I've always found that from an early age. Mm-hmm. So that sense of community has been really important to me. It's what brought me to the table. It's what keeps me at the table because I don't necessarily think I think like everybody else there about everything. And at some point, I'm telling you, I decided to keep carrying community and I decided to lift up and keep carrying uncertainty and be okay with that. Mm-hmm. You've talked about the things you drop. What are the things you continue to carry?
So I have a very strong online community. And I don't even know what to call it because like most of us don't really have a whole lot to do with the liturgies anymore because that's been an evolution. Yeah. But
I'm finding your sound is different now.
Oh, sorry, is that better?
Yep. Perfect.
Okay. That's been an evolution, but I still like feel like that's a really strong community. So I definitely hold on to that. I hold on to the space I have in my life now that I've dealt with trauma, because whatever I've let go of, it just feels like there's options and there's so much more room for compassion. It is so funny. When I stopped worrying about sin, I became such a nicer person. Like, yeah. It's hilarious. But the thing about the community, the online community, is they're not here. So at the beginning of 2020, my resolution, and I had been listening to the table online for probably a year, I was like, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to invest in real local community. And, you know, obviously there's the irony that the pandemic started and I only was there like 3 times, I think. But I still feel like the community at the table is different, even though it is still mostly virtual, because you all are here. And that is, that's just really important to me, is that to have this local community, and there's just, it's just different. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to know that, you know, if things really, you know, came to it, there could be help there or whatever, right? It's not like, you know, my friend in Chicago or another friend in Charlotte, North Carolina, or Asheville, North Carolina, or wherever, they can't do, you know, they can only help so much.
Yeah, that's true. So,
how do you think COVID has been different for you because you've deconstructed?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. Okay, so one way would be that constant question of what is God's plan in all of this, or right. How is he working this to good and things like that. Like, I don't see, I don't know if I ever saw God as like the chess master moving the pieces, but almost like, mm-hmm. And maybe that was one of those things that I couldn't hold both at once. I couldn't hold free will and the idea of God moving everything. I couldn't hold, it was hard to hold like terrible things happening to people if God was moving everything. Heck, I also couldn't hold, in tandem, it was too hard to hold the belief in a loving God and the belief in hell. Like all of those things just, I didn't feel like I could hold both of them. So I dropped hell. That was nice.
That's a big baggage. Yeah.
It is. I dropped the idea of God orchestrating things. But interesting enough, I have held to an idea of God working through things. But I see that as being at a heart level, at a relational level, not helping me find the ideal parking space or, you know, stopping bad things from happening.
Mm-hmm.
But that at some level, so help me. Maybe this is a place where my integrity still is lacking, because if somebody asks you, what's your proof for that? It's like, I just have a sense. But even yesterday in counseling somebody, I remember, like, he excused himself to use the washroom for a while. And I just stopped and prayed. I'm going, I don't know where to go here. You got to mm-hmm. help me. I've had lots of moments like that, especially in social work. And when he came back in the room, I got back into it and we went somewhere. And yeah, could that have been coincidence? Absolutely. Maybe nothing spiritual happened there. But I feel like it did.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just feel like it did.
Yeah.
So I feel like God's hand is in my life. I feel like God's hand is in, it is helping me to understand things. I feel like it's helping me to understand me. I feel like he is moving me in ways that make me appreciate, have grace, have gratitude, bring joy. Could it have all been happenstance or my own way of being? I suppose, but, and maybe I just want to believe this, but it sure is a satisfying way to believe, to believe mm-hmm. That there is a God who loves me and who has grace for me. It is a rewarding way for me to move in this world. So then I kind of go back to C.S. Lewis at that point in time, where he talks about, you know, we are born with this desire for milk and there is milk. We are born for a desire to be held and there is somebody to hold us. So maybe the fact that we are born looking for meaning and worth means that there is meaning and worth. What do you hold to?
I read a book in the summer by Dr. Shaniqua Walker Barnes. It's called I Bring the Voices of My People, and it's basically about racism. And at the end, she says, like, this all seems, you know, systematic racism and all these things seem impossible to fix, but that's why she still believes in God, or that's how she hangs on to her faith. And that actually really opened up things for me. So I do find myself praying again. Not formal. I don't pray the way I used to. But I do reach out to something greater than myself and just go like, I don't know what to do here. Or you hear stories and you're just like, you know, the lament. You're like, okay, this is terrible. You know, like my heart can't hold some of the things that have happened in the US lately.
Yeah.
And I think I feel that nudge to kind of, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be back to the, like, I'm in a personal relationship with Jesus thing. And I think that, you know, the feeling I used to get sometimes from worship is probably, you know, not available anymore. But there's still something.
Yeah.
And the Jesus narrative makes sense to me. So yeah. I'm going with it.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull her in there. Thanks, Misty. I love our talks.
Me too.
And I would love to hear back in the comments from anybody who wants to share how they reflected on this from their listening.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
All right. Now. Have a good one. Bye.